Blog Talk Radio.
Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by ManaPromo, providing the best quality products that your animals deserve and at a value you can appreciate. ManaPro, nurturing life. Andy Schneider, the Chicken Whisperer, is taking a few days of very well-deserved vacation. He'll be back with us full-time Monday, August 15th. I'm Pat Foreman, and of course, I'm an avid sustainable agricultural advocate and, of course, a poultry enthusiast. I'm the author of City Chicks and co-author of Chicken Tractor, Chits, Day Range Poultry, Backyard Market Gardening, and a couple other books. Our name is Jesse Paul Bidbird, and of course Jesse always brings a wonderful exciting ecstatic time to the show. And today is Tuesday, August the 9th. Already it's August 9th, and we would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. That's right, this radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, gardening, urban farming, emergency preparedness, and, of course, living a self-sufficient and healthy lifestyle. You can follow the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show 24 hours a day at our website. That's chickenwhisperer.com, Chicken Whisperer. And from there, you can follow us on Twitter, become a fan on Facebook, visit our blog, sign up for the monthly e-newsletter, the Chicken Scratch, and, of course, get all kinds of great chicken gear. If you are listening live today on Blog Talk Radio, we invite you to join us in the chat room that's going on right now. It is filling up. Oh, my goodness, it's gotten so full. It's going on right now, and there you can talk with other backyard poultry, with the Chicken Whisperer fans, and, of course, the other chicken owners from literally around the country and even across the world. We do have an international following. You can also, if you're in the chat room, type in and ask any questions that you may have for our special guests when we have them on. And our special guest today is Jeanette Barringer from the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. And Jeanette will be talking to us about rare breeds conservation in France, where she just got back from spending a month over there. Now, to join this live chat room is so easy. Just log on to Blog Talk Radio, click register. You can make up your own name, whatever you want to call yourself, and start chatting along with our chat room chicken ears right away. It is literally that easy. We also like to invite you to mark this radio show as a favorite and request to be on our friends list while you're there at Blog Talk Radio. Just take a moment to do this today, and again, we thank you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by ManaPro.
ManaPro understands that poultry owners are as diverse as the birds they care for, which is why they offer both medicated and non-medicated starters. Whichever product you choose, you know you're getting great nutrition for your new chicks. Look for ManaPro products at a retailer near you. ManaPro, nurturing life.
When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust. Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing. It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com. You've ordered your new baby chicks and even have the brooder prepared, but now it's time to order that new chicken coop. My Amish Goods offers quality-built chicken coops for every size, flock, and budget. They have many styles and colors to choose from and will ship them fully assembled right to your front door. Act now and receive a special upgrade at no additional charge. Visit them online at myamishgoods.com. That's myamishgoods.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
Looking for something? Find it online at Bidbird Auctions. Bidbird.com is an online auction service that caters specifically to the poultry, waterfowl, game bird, and pigeon hobbyists. With so many rare and exciting species listed daily and in a wide variety of categories, you'll want to visit often. Join hundreds of the nation's top breeders that have made Bidbird Auctions their new home. And get sold on Bidbird.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty, folks. Welcome back to Chicken Whisperer, the Ben Backyard Poultry. It is now time. It is now time. Here it comes.
Yeah.
I got it. To bring
you
on Jesse Paul, our very special guest co-host today. Jesse, well, thanks for joining us this Tuesday. How are you doing today?
Oh, good afternoon. I am doing okay. I'm doing okay. How about you, Pat?
I'm doing great.
Are you?
I feel like I've had caffeine, but I haven't. It's
one
of those
there
days.
You go.
Oh, I just slept really well, and I got up and just things have been, you know, some days you get in a groove, and I think this is one of those days because it seems like I've just been getting so much done and in such a short amount of time. So that's a wonderful thing when that happens. I wish I could live my entire life that way.
So you're grooving today. You're groovy.
I'm grooving.
Good.
I'm grooving. Yeah. You know, that's a 60s term. You're dating
yeah.
yourself.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I saw it on a Scooby-Doo movie once, I think. There you go.
Yeah.
But
Go ahead.
I'd like to make a general observation, and it's something that I've been noticing for years, but mothers, especially, you know, nurturing mothers with babies, there is nothing so precious as a mother who's loving on their children in the world and how they protect them and how they fuss over them. So it's not mothers
mm-hmm.
and everything else, but it's just amazing how different the women are wired from men. It's a good thing, obviously, but if you ever just sat back and just watched a woman, you know, tending to her children, it's beautiful. It's perfect. So for all you mothers out there, even though it's not Mother's Day, whatever, you know, or anything like that, just you guys are wonderful. So anyway, well, that's my
there. There is a saying, Jesse, that every day is Mother's Day. It never stops.
Yeah. But yeah, yeah. So anyways, I just thought I'd throw it in.
It's, well, you're so right, and it's true with all mothers. I mean, not just humans, but whether they're
right.
Hens or cows, or I mean, just that love, just unconditional love pours forth, and you can just it's just contagious, I think.
Yes. So, anyways, how's your weather out there, Pat?
The weather. Let's see. Yeah, we have weather. It's getting cooler. And my gosh, what's interesting, Jesse, is how much shorter the days are. They're so much noticeably shorter. Instead of getting dark at 9:30, now it's dark at 8, and you know,
wow.
Dusk comes along, and so we're headed towards fall pretty fast. We're speeding there. Labor Day coming up, just the September, was it 3rd? I think it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, here it's miserable. We live in the central part of the state of Florida. And this time of year, we were talking in the chat room, it is like living in the rainforest. We live in what would be considered like an oak hammock. It's beautiful in the winter, but my goodness, July, August, September, whew, it's like, it's like a steam bath out there. It's horrible. It rains almost, it seems like it rains 24 hours a day, but anyways.
Oh,
people are saying that it's dry, and somebody was saying that they're raising dehydrated vegetables. They don't even have to dry them, so. Come here and get some of our rain. That's been horrible.
Yeah. Well, here it's so dry, Jesse, that the honeybees are suffering. They can't find enough to eat because it's just so dry. And that's my beekeeper that keeps hives here on some of the land here at Greenway. They've lost two hives so far because they feel like they start. Am I cutting in and out?
No. Nope. You sound good.
Okay, great.
Good.
Great.
The bees, though, don't they actually move them across country? Somebody told me that they move on these big tractor trailers, and they move the colony, I guess you call them, Pat, and they move them all across country different times of the year. I thought that was really
interesting. Yes. In fact, there is an incredible film I'd like to recommend to everybody that's listening to consider watching. It's called The Queen of the Sun. The Queen of the Sun, and it's about the honeybees and how they're migrating, and about the hive collapse, and it's just a beautifully done show, and it even features a honeybee sanctuary that's here in Virginia, but it's a honeybee sanctuary. And when I first heard that, I kind of chuckled. Isn't that's cute? I mean, you
right.
think, oh, a sanctuary. But what they've done is they've taken these hives, they let them develop their comb naturally in the top bars, and then they've been planting beescaping, bees that will help feed the honeybees year-round. And they're finding that they don't have any problems with the hive collapse. They're really healthy. The varroa has not shown up. I mean, it's so that movie, Queen of the Sun, highly, highly, highly recommended. It's great for group showings or even for your poultry club or your poultry and garden club showings
right.
to see that.
Right.
Yeah.
Are you a, oh my goodness, Fiona in the chat room. I got to look away from the chat room. Are you a honey fan or a fan of honey?
I'm sorry, say again?
Are you a fan of honey?
Yes.
You enjoy honey. Okay.
Oh, absolutely. Honey and maple
yeah.
syrup. Those are my two main sweeteners. If I go I try to avoid the high fructose and the high refined sugar as much as I can. But,
right.
Yeah, I love honey. Honey and
yeah,
peanut butter with a banana sandwich. Ooh.
Oh yeah, deep fried with lots of chocolate syrup. Yes. What Elvis used to love deep fried banana peanut butter banana sandwiches. Did you know that?
I did not know that. Yet another thing else used to
do. Yeah. No, there was a guy back in your time. He's supposed to be real popular. I just heard about him from old people. Elvis, yes. And he used to like...
from old people?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, us old people that know about Elvis.
Yeah, I don't know anything about him. Never heard of him. But anyways. So there you go. Yeah, it's funny on the honey how different it can be from area to area. The orange blossom honey that we get here when the oranges are, Pat, if you haven't lived unless you're here when the blossoms are blooming and the whole state smells like sweet orange blossom. And to get honey from the whole state's just wonderful. The central part of Florida, everywhere you go, it's beautiful. But anyways, yeah, it's funny how it changes from place to place, or for whatever the bees are, or whatever flowers they're visiting. So.
Yeah, the different taste of the different pollens is absolutely remarkable, as well as the honey. I mean, when I had my beehives, I'd collect pollen. They'd drop in the bottom, and I could go collect it. And I was surprised at how different the tastes were, even among the Holland, the pollen. So,
right.
Yeah, and honey and maple syrup too has amazingly different tastes, depending on when and how it's processed. But boy, I love maple syrup.
Yes. But anyway, hey, can you hear me okay? Because somebody was saying that I was cutting in and out. I just disconnected my headset. Can you hear me okay? Or
yeah, you're fine now. It was just a little staticky, but not enough to really comment on too much. But now you're smooth.
Now I'm smooth. Okay.
Now you're smooth. You're smooth. Okay, you're smooth. You're in the groove. You're smooth.
Yes. Yeah, welcome to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. You have the groove and smooth. There we go.
That's right. Well, I think it's time for chickens in the news here, Jesse, since we've covered our little chicken chat. And, of course, Chickens in the News is brought to you by Meyer Hatchery. So we'll be right back with the Chickens in the News.
Since 1985, Meyer Hatchery in Polk, Ohio, has been a family-owned and operated business. Meyer Hatchery is a year-round hatchery that offers over 160 breeds of poultry, including chickens, ducks, geese, turkeys, guineas, peafowl, and game birds, plus a full line of feed and supplies. Just need a few baby chicks? No problem. Meyer Hatchery will ship as few as 3 baby chicks. Check them out online at MeyerHatchery.com. That's MeyerHatchery.com.
All righty. Jesse.
Yes.
Jesse.
Yes.
Okay. I've got a let me start here today. I have a Chickens in the News that Dragonfly emailed in, or just put in the chat room just a little while ago, and it's sort of the same story, but again, it's happening all across the country. It is epidemic, absolutely epidemic. And this one says Lower Township tells a 79-year-old woman she has to get rid of her 6 chickens that she's raising for eggs to feed herself.
Okay.
I mean, it's like, oh, my goodness, come on, local agriculture. This is written by Richard Degner, D-E-G-E-N-E-R, and it says here, Lower Township, where Claire Nagel, she's our 79-year-old that is a chicken fancier, heard about a national movement towards locally grown foods. So what does she do? I mean, when you're 79 and you hear about a movement like that, well, she just went out and planted herself a big garden and got herself some chickens. Well, the problem was, apparently, that she does not live on a farm. I mean, why would she live on a farm? She's just living in Lower Township. So now those 6 Rhode Island Reds have gotten her into trouble with at least one neighbor and a violation notice from the local code enforcement officer. So the whole thing was really about doing locally and having some local resources of food. I'm interested in getting eggs, organic eggs, for something less than $4 a dozen. And I got to tell you, organic eggs here sell for $5 a dozen. You know,
Wow.
So she wants her own chickens to be able to afford some of the highest protein that is more easily assemblable of all the protein in the world. So what they did, of course, they received a complaint, an anonymous complaint from a neighbor, and then everything takes off from there. So when they went out to inspect her coop, they said it was very clean. They were impressed. The chickens have an outdoor pen, and they can hop through a window into a detached garage for shelter. She plays country music for them and feeds them grass and produce from her garden. I mean, these chickens have it made. So she's appealing. It's a very clean environment, said the officer, with no noise, no odor. They haven't laid eggs yet. They're too young, so they're just not quite point of lay. So she said, Nagel said, that she had checked with the township about chickens before she bought them, but she doesn't remember who she spoke with, but she was told that residents are allowed to keep one pet chicken per person. And with 5 people living on her lot, including several renters, she figured she could legally get 5 chickens. So they're all pets. I mean, here we go. They're all pets. It's not agriculture. And so they're appealing that now. So she's got... she's taking it back, and they're going to hopefully change their laws, and so we can track this one and see what comes out of it. So what's interesting too, I'm finding, Jesse, is there are more and more older people are getting into chickens. It's like, one, they're very entertaining, of course, but then two, a lot of them are on restricted budgets. I mean, they're on fixed incomes and they want to eat healthily. So, yeah, and they are very entertaining. You know, they're such easy pets to take care of. Pets with benefits, of course, we call them pets with benefits. So thank you, Dragonfly, for sending that one in. We'll track that, and I'll get in touch with them and send them some information that might help their cause.
Yes.
So you got any chickens in the news there, Jess?
Well, I do have. You know, we're not just this show's not just about chickens. So it's more, you know, about a self-sustaining lifestyle and everything else. I wanted to kind of comment on something and read some news about something. Andy commented on on his Facebook page. From Andy Schneider, of course, the Chicken Whisperer, he says, to all the people who thought I was nuts, when I begged them to buy silver and gold back in 2007, when silver was $11 an ounce and gold was $839 an ounce, I told you so, he says. Today, silver is at $39 and gold is at $1723. So in a couple of years, gold went from $839 to $1723. On the heels of that, this news comes to us from TriCities.com. Crystal Fantasy says, as the stock market tumbled Monday, investors moved their money into safer investments like gold. Gold is an all-time high of more than $1,700 an ounce today. The price hike is resulting in a gold rush of people buying and selling gold locally. The demand is good news for stores that buy the precious metal, especially in Crystal Fantasy. In the last year, 8 gold buyers have set up shop in Bristol. Today, 6 remain. Those buyers hope to continue to ride the wave of gold sales. Since opening Gold Buyers LLC 7 weeks ago, more and more people have walked through Steve Davis's doors. The customer base has more than doubled, and he expects the gold rush to continue. So the article goes on, but with everything going on and our country's or national credit rating just to AA+ rather than AAA, people are finding safety or they're just buying more gold as far as investment or retirement. So
yeah,
it's just funny because I've heard Andy talk about this for years. So.
Yeah. Well, my brother is he's just getting silver coins. He figures that's good enough. He's just to kind of stockpiling some of those. But I got to tell you, Jesse, these chickens might be laying the golden eggs. I mean, if the food supply really drops or gets too expensive or too scarce and you have chickens, you'll still be eating. You can't eat gold. I've never known of anyone that can live a healthy diet for very long on gold because you might as well fast, you know, or oil for that matter.
Right. No,
so
exactly.
Certainly for emergency preparedness and for recession preparedness and just to go into the future, I can't think of anything that's more stockpile worthy than to have a family flock. Can you?
No. Pat, do you have another chicken news? I am going to call back in.
I do.
I have an echo as well on my phone, so I'm going to call right back and you go ahead with the next news, please.
Okay, I've got two here, and one is, this is really cool. Well, actually, I have three. Maybe I'll do this one because it's getting a little older. I think we might have, this one we've innuendoed at several times, but this comes to us from the Wall Street Journal. A friend gave me a copy of the Wall Street Journal. It says, cooped up, chickens come home to roost for urbanites with a yen for hen. And so what they're finding is, this is from Pittsburgh, this is written by Chris Mahler, M-A-H-E-R. It says, one Sunday afternoon, Judy Noble Choder opened her sprawling backyard, and this backyard has a fish pond, a winding stone path, a meditation platform that's nestled at the edge, and she's right on the Allegheny River. So she opened her backyard to about 400, I mean, there were 400 curious visitors. And what those visitors were there for, the main attraction was a plastic mesh enclosed chicken run and a gray coop that had green trim and 5 hens. And the hens were Buffy the Worm Slayer, I love these names, Buffy the Worm Slayer, Attila the Hen, Mother Clucker, Bonita and Juanita. So 400 people come to this upscale house to see her hens. This is a plucky cousin of the Gentile Garden Tour, the Urban Chicken Coop Tour. And what we're seeing is that the chicken coop tours are exploding across the country, literally exploding. Austin, Texas has the Funky Chicken Coop Tour. Portland, Oregon has their Tour de Coop. Dallas, Texas has a peep at the coops. And there are really more than half a dozen. I think I counted 22 in 2010, including Seattle, Los Angeles, Salt Lake City, Madison, Wisconsin. Of course, they were one of the forerunners of the Chicken Coop Tour. Bend, Oregon, Davis, California. I mean, they all have these coops to show off to the public. And, of course, some of the coops, they're like gazebos, some have brass handles, some have tongue and groove cedar, some have wraparound porches and cupolas. There's a coop in Phoenix on the Phoenix Tour that had a chandelier inside the coop. And I saw a coop up in Madison, Wisconsin that had a saloon. It was fashioned after a saloon. It even played country music and had lights inside for the hens to come in. So it says some chicken people are literally coming out of the closet. And this is from Mrs. Noble Choder. She's a corporate lawyer who organized this summer's first Chickens in the Hood of the Pittsboro Urban Chicken Coop Tour. So we've got a corporate lawyer organizing this. So this article goes on quite a bit more, and it talks about some of the history, but I don't want to go into it right now. But literally, I know our Poultry and Garden Club, the Shenandoah Valley Poultry and Garden Club, was planning to have a tour this year, but just decided we needed to wait just one more year so we could include the city of Lexington. So that's coming up, and I bet next year, if you follow this, there's going to be, I would predict, easily 50 to 100 coop tours across our country as chickens sort of invade and the charm of chickens seduce people from their to keeping more and more chickens. So what do you think about that, Jesse? I think I've got you. You're live here with us, aren't you? Nope. Let's see.
I don't have an echo anymore. That should be smooth, as you say.
Okay, there you are. Okay. Well, cool. So, yeah, is your place, or is your county, your city going to have a coop tour next year?
I don't know. They should stop by here, I guess, too. But no, not that I've heard of.
Anyway, they're so much fun. I mean, they're literally so much fun. This next one, I've got one more. And I'll save this next one for later. But it fits in with our talk today. Jeanette Barringer is going to talk with us about rare breed conservation in France. She's been there the last month on her vacation. So, of course, what is a staff member of the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy do on her vacation? She looks into rare breeds and the conservation efforts. I love Jeanette. But this one, it comes to us from Britain, and this is from the Farmers Weekly Interactive, and it's written by Scott Casey. And this is also a problem we're seeing and have been paying attention to, and that is there's a massive, this is massive rare breeds sale. They're selling all their breeds at Shropshire. And this is one of the largest rare breed poultry sales ever in the UK. Is set for the beginning of September. It's got thousands of birds, hundreds of poultry houses, and drinkers, feeders, incubators, and hatchers on sale. So what's happening with, I mean, why are they doing this? Well, they're retiring. They've just done it enough. The Wernlis collection, which has been bred and sold rare breed chickens for more than 25 years, is being broken up because its founders have decided to retire. And Jesse, you know, we talk about this at the American Livestock Breed Conservancy annual conference, and it's constantly comes up that these older poultrymen and the real masters at keeping the breeds, all these minor breeds going, they're retiring, and we don't have youngsters stepping up to learn from them to be able to carry on the tradition. So now here we've got a big one from Shropshire. Anyway, so Sean Hammond runs the collection with his wife, Sue, and they said it was a really hard decision, but it's a necessary one. He says, although sometimes I don't feel up to it, he's 72, and in November, it's one of those things when he just doesn't have the energy and the get up and go to go deal with all those hundreds of rare breed birds. So they build a clientele. This is like a legacy. They build a clientele not only across the UK, but also across the Shetlands and the Orkneys, but they also send eggs to South Africa, to Finland, to Sweden, to Germany, to Holland, because it's absolutely staggering the network that they've got. So this was established in 1986, and it has grown to produce about 15,000 chicks every year, supplying breeders, poultry fanciers, backyard and small flock producers, as well as universities and research institutions. They have more than 500 breeding stock from 60 different breeds. They will be sold in trios, and you have the opportunity to purchase additional females. Plus, there'll be more than 1,800 youngsters from just from out of the incubator to the point of lay, and they also have stock cockerels. So that's what's going on in the UK, and it's interesting because that's right next door, of course, just across the channel to France.
Yeah.
So, Jesse, what do you think of that one?
Well, you know, we do go to a lot of poultry shows every year, and we do see a lot of youth. The good thing about the ACA and the ABA, their sanctioned shows, they do have youth shows as part of the show, so I think that is imperative to the future of the rare breeds here in our country. So we do see a lot of youth, or at least I do, Pat, at state fair levels and for the bigger shows. So.
Well, absolutely, Jesse, and I've noticed that as well. But to get from the youth, from like the 4-H level up to being a master breeder and really knowing, I mean, that, you almost have to go through a judge internship to do that. And well, and I think the enthusiasm is coming quite a bit more, but who's going to, with all these guys retire, we need to have people, apprentices there working right with them to learn the tricks of the trade. And having said that, I think there are programs that are coming up to teach that more and more, to make it more common knowledge.
Yeah, the whole master breeder thing and the point thing, that is more obviously for the breeder than the protection of the birds. And you know, we were going to talk about breed clubs, and I've found with a lot of breed clubs, it becomes more of a personal bragging contest than much better for the birds, and it strips these clubs apart. I see it with many clubs. Just someone isn't necessarily a master breeder doesn't mean that they don't have the eye or the touch or the knack for preserving a breed or variety in the way it should be presented according to the ABA.
Oh, Jesse, you're cutting out a little bit more. Jesse, in fact, I think we lost.
Yeah.
Okay. Jesse, maybe you could try calling back in again. You're cutting out on us. Jesse? Okay. Well, let's go to a short commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to greet our special guest for today. It's Jeanette Barringer. She's the with the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy, and we're going to be talking about conservation of rare breeds in France. We'll be right back.
Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com.
EggCartons.com, your discount supplier of egg cartons and poultry supplies. They carry a wide variety of egg cartons in paper, plastic, and foam, as well as a great selection of poultry supplies, including incubators, brooders, waterers, feeders, and more. Order online at eggcartons.com or call toll-free 1-888-852-5340. Free full-color catalog available. Be sure to sign up for their online newsletter for more great specials. That's eggcartons.com.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer. If you're in the market for a new incubator, then look no further than GQF. They have a great selection of tabletop and cabinet-style incubators at prices you can afford. I love my GQF Genesis Model 1588. It has a large picture window and an automatic thermostat, which makes for a better hatch every time. go pick out your new incubator at gqfradio.com. That's gqfradio.com.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty. Welcome back to the Chicken Whisperer, Backyard Poultry and Sustainable Lifestyles Talk Show. Our special guest today is Jeanette Barringer, and I see we also have, it looks like Andy is in the chat room, but he doesn't have his little hand raised up. So let me go ahead and bring on Jeanette. Are you with us there? Hello. Jesse.
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, you're calling in on a different number. Okay.
I am?
No, you're not. Let me bring Jeanette on.
Oh, my goodness.
Jeanette, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
There we go.
Hey,
okay, great. I've got so many numbers here in the chat room lit up. So, well, Jeanette, welcome to the Chicken Whisperer Talk Show. Gosh, welcome back from vacation, too. You must have had a wonderful time, and I bet your French is absolutely fluent.
I wouldn't say fluent, but, I can carry on a conversation, and, people understand what I'm saying, but my family laughs at me because I tend to butcher the grammar a bit, and sometimes I just all-out make up words, but in the end, they understand me pretty well.
And they're forgiving with someone. I know when I was in France one time, I thought I was doing absolutely beautiful French. I studied so hard. And they'd say, oh, you're American. Like I didn't even have a chance.
So well, the thing that gets my husband is they're all teasing him that he's got an American accent now. And he's like, no, I do not. And he gets offended by that. But, we had a great time, and for the first time in her life, it was all of a sudden cool to speak French for my daughter, who's now 16, and she brought a friend with her and was her friend's official translator, so she had a reason to really try this go-round, and that little booger understands a lot more than we gave her credit for, and so all those times Fred and I are chatting in French, she knew what we were talking about. So,
she kept
can't hide any
all these years.
Kids.
Oh my! I need a sound check. Jesse, is there an echo?
Hear you. I hear you 100%. Jeanette sounds like she might be on a speakerphone or in a room with a lot of tile, but we can hear her too. So.
And you're coming through pretty clear. So.
Yeah.
Jeanette, you're not on a, are you on a speakerphone, chance?
Yeah, I am. But I pulled it closer. Is that better?
Oh, yeah, actually.
That is better.
Thank you.
Okay.
So now that we can hear you speak English for us, very good.
I'll try. But, I went away on vacation, and as Pat pointed out, I have a hard time not going anywhere without doing something related to work because, I love what I do. And while I was over there, I had a chance to try and understand a bit about what's going on with rare breed conservation, in particular in Brittany, because that's where all my family's at. And so we saw some pretty cool things over there, and I was hoping to see the breeds that ALBC works with, because we work with a number of French breeds that are on our conservation priority list, and those include the Poitou donkeys, and then several chickens, the Faverolles and the Houdon and the La Flèche and the Crèvecoeur. And then we do the Rouen ducks and Toulouse geese. And so we do have a vested interest in French breed conservation. And I did get to see some dynamite La Flèche chickens, and was really impressed at just how big they were, because I envisioned something a bit smaller, you know, and had good breast meat proportions, but the birds, my understanding was, you know, weren't these massive things. And I went to this rare breeds farm, which is called the Eco Musée du Pays de Rennes, which basically means the Eco Museum of the Country of Rennes. And it's kind of the regional capital of Brittany. And they had this, like, 14th century farm that it's been a working farm since then. And it's been turned into this museum dedicated to raising traditional varieties of produce and animals, and specifically the varieties that were raised in Brittany and Normandy. And so these would be varieties that are adapted to a cold and wet climate. You know, it drove home that when we got there, and, you know, we left triple digits and sun here in North Carolina, and in Brittany it was like in the 60s the whole time we were there, you know, and it was rainy off and on the whole time we were there. And it could be very unpredictable weather, and so the animals that develop from that really are pretty hardy, because the, you know, the weather's cold and wet during the long winters, and there's not a heck of a lot of forage to go around. So these breeds tended to be smaller. They tended to be very hardy. The other point about them being smaller is in that for the majority of the time, for majority of the year, the men from that region typically went to sea. Fishing was a huge source of income and livelihood for the men in Brittany, and so it was the women that were back at the farm taking care of it. And if you've ever met Breton woman, clear example is my mother-in-law. You know, she's an itty-bitty little lady, and you know, most of them are around 5 feet tall. You know, and so they weren't able to manhandle animals that got very large. And also, if they were large, they tended to be docile. So it was an interesting combination of the climate and the culture there, and also the countryside that you know, created these breeds that fit that particular niche. And at the Eco Musée, it was neat. They had a number of species there. And as I said, I was able to see the La Flèche chickens that were just phenomenal. And I was so excited when I got back to the States. I sent photos of them to Frank Reese. And I'm like, you know, are my eyes wrong? But is this a dynamite-looking La Flèche? And he was like, yeah, it's a good one. And so I can happily say I've seen a real good La Flèche, because they're pretty rare over here. I believe they're still listed as critical on our list. And, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I've yet to see a La Flèche in a poultry show. Are they fairly common in the shows?
I have. Oh,
I've never seen one.
Yes, I have. I wouldn't say they're common by any means, though, but I have seen them. You know, I'm chomping at the bit here, just dying to ask you if you saw any Breda fowl when you were out there.
Any Breda fowl? No, I did not.
No? Okay.
No, they're all French breeds.
Well, they say Breda is originally a French breed.
Isn't Breda a city in the Netherlands?
Actually, it's, you know, Okay, the deal is, I guess they were originally bred in France, but the Dutch had kind of accepted them for them for their own kind of breed type thing. But they are originally from France, or so.
Oh,
the
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
The only chickens, sadly enough, I saw were at the Echo Musée, and then I saw chickens in the distance. But I was mostly in cow and horse country, and so saw a lot of cattle, a lot of horses, not a lot of poultry. The varieties I saw at the Echo Musée, you know, included the La Fleche, and then there was another really old breed, one of their oldest, that was called the Gaulois, and my understanding is they date way back in that region and, you know, are very gamey-looking chicken, single comb, and kind of, you know, the type of chicken that you would let range around the farm on its own and you know, fend for itself. They're pretty wily. You know, they are not heavy-bodied and a little more high-strung. And then they had another breed there that was called the Coucou de Rennes, which looks almost like a Plymouth Rock, not quite as big. But again, another very old breed that's been around a long, long time. And that was more of a meat chicken slash egg layer. And that one was of particular pride for the place because, of course, they're in the city of Rennes, and this is a breed that was specific to that city. And, you know, it was another thing that drove home the whole concept of terroir in that, you know, the products are connected to the people and place in which they're developed, and the French are particularly attuned to that. And for instance, you know, you could say the flavor of a Coucou de Rennes is different if it was raised anywhere else. Therefore, if you, you know, are selling Coucou de Rennes, it's not the real deal unless you had it raised in that region. You know, it goes back to the whole champagne thing, calling champagne from, you know, vineyards that aren't in the Champagne region of France. And the French are very keen on those ideas and firmly believe it. And the same thing goes with these cattle, the animals, the cattle, the chickens, the goats and everything, that they really are tied. And so we have a few examples of that here in the United States, but they're far fewer and further between compared to a place like France that's had, you know, centuries to develop breeds specific to places like that. But it was a wonderful thing to see that connection and try and understand, you know, how did this breed come to being and why. And so that was a take-home message for me. You know, some of the other fowl I saw over there was a breed of duck I'd never heard of before called the Nantes. And this was a breed of duck. I think it was a dual purpose, both egg and meat. And it was developed in the Nantes area, which is kind of abutting the Loire Valley where all the big chateaus are. And the duck is kind of a silver apple yard looking type duck, a bit smaller than the apple yards, but very similar color patterning. And
hey, Jeanette, how do you spell the name of that breed of duck?
The Nantes, it's Nantaise, I believe.
Nantes duck. Oh, I hadn't heard of that either.
And I can send you a link. I pulled together a little slideshow of the breeds that I encountered over in France, and I can share that with you. It's got a couple of breeds there that are not rare, but I just couldn't help photographing them, so they're part of the slideshow. But if you, I'll send you the link, and when you get to the webpage, in the upper right corner, you click Show Info, and that will give the names of the breeds and a little blurb on what they are.
Okay.
So I can do
excellent.
That.
I look forward to cruising that.
Yeah. So, you know, aside from the fowl, I saw the neatest breed of sheep that I've ever seen, and if I could have shoved it in my pocket and walked away from it, I would have. but they're called West Mount sheep, and no word of a lie, the tops of their heads were no higher than my kneecaps. They were the teeniest, tiniest little things I've ever seen. And they were a breed that was developed on a small island off the coast near Brest. And the island would have been an extremely challenging environment for any sheep. And these sheep evolved to be extremely small so that they could forage on what little forage was there. And that would have been primarily salt grasses, brush, and very little grass. And so they were really hardy, and they were extremely small, and they are very tame. They're not very wild because they didn't really have predators out there. And so really neat breed of sheep. And, you know, I saw the flock when I was walking in, and I thought there was it was just a paddock of lambs, and then I saw one of the lambs having a baby nursing off of it, and that's when it dawned on me, oh my God, these are adults, and they're actually used for both wool and meat, and of course it'd be a tiny carcass, but the sailors in particular. Loved to stop by that island and get treated to some of the lamb from there, and it would have had a little bit of a salty taste from them grazing on marsh grasses. But the breed almost went extinct, and then the French the zoo in Paris and a few of the lords from Brittany stepped in and saved them. And now they're on their way to recovery. You know, there's a few thousand now, but they were pretty close to the brink.
Jeanette, what was the name of the sheep that you were talking about?
They're called the Ouessant, and I think you spell it O U E S S A N T, and it's the name of the island that they come from. Just going to double check the name, but the name will also be on the slide in the slideshow. But they're just a fabulous, easy keeping little sheep, and I thought, you know, that's the breed for me for my backyard. But of course, there's none in the United States. You know, they have not been exported here. There's some in England, the Netherlands, and and they're doing better. And then another really bizarre-looking sheep, or I find them bizarre-looking, was the Bleu de Maine, and that's B-L-E-U, and then Du, D-U, and then Maine, just spelled just like the state of Maine. And this is one of only two breeds of sheep left in France that have no Spanish influence. Most of the breeds in France have some Merino influence or outside influence, and the Bleu de Maine and the Ouessant that we were talking about are the only two left that really don't have any outside influence, that they're very true to what you would have found historically in that region. And the Bleu de Maine is interesting in that their heads are bald, and they're like slate blue. I mean, dark, dark blue, and just really very expressive when you look at their faces. They've got these big eyes and this dark blue head, and then their bodies are white. And they're primarily a wool breed, but they also, people love to take the rams and cross them on to meat sheep to get a really nice cross for meat. And their numbers are doing okay. I think, you know, there's somewhere around 3,000 left, so their numbers are pretty comfortable. But just a really kind of funky-looking sheep that was over there. And
are striking. Jeanette, I just posted a link to the Bloomerman Bleu de Mermaid, I guess, in the website. And I've never seen sheep with blue faces like that. That's incredibly striking.
Well, that deep blue is just really something else, and I just loved looking at them. another interesting animal was after we had finished going through the sheep, we came upon the goats, and they had one goat variety there that was native to Brittany, and locally it was called the ditch goat. And they're a feral-looking kind of goat, very shaggy. And these goats were basically used to keep the ditches on the sides of the roads clear, and they also used them to keep orchards clear of brush. In Brittany, because it's so wet, when the brush comes in, it comes in fast. And so they really have to have animals working on brush control all the time. And these goats, historically, that's what they were used for. And the other thing they were valued for was milk production, because there were a lot of times where, making a living was pretty hard over there between weather and being invaded by, just about every culture that came anywhere near them. They could provide milk to help supplement nursing children. And so they produce a good amount of milk and have that thick, shaggy coat that warm clothing could be made with. And, of course, the meat. And also, keeping brush was a really important job for those animals. And
yeah. Hey, Jeanette, how did they manage them? How did they put them and keep them where they wanted them to do the clearing, the goat tractoring?
Well, I think they do. It's a good question. I haven't looked into that aspect of it, but I would suspect it would be much like what people a lot of times do today, in that, you just let them loose in the area that you want to have them graze, and you just have somebody standing by to watch them. Like my father-in-law, he used to do that with sheep and goats down near Grenoble. When he was a boy, his task was to mind the sheep and goats, and so he was out there with them all day, and at the
really?
End of the day,
okay.
He'd bring them in. Yeah, so I suspect the same would be in Brittany. And these, the last population of ditch goats was accidentally discovered in the 1990s and was able to be brought to the Echo Muse shortly after it opened. I think it opened in 94. And now there are 500 ditch goats out there. So it's exciting that they're coming back. And they remind me a lot of the Spanish goats we have here in the U.S. Same kind of story, that they were just the traditional goat that was used for everything. And these ones, they've got a little different head, and their ear sets are different. And because they're like a land race, they don't have a breed standard, and they come in just about any color you can imagine a goat could come in. And so they're very colorful. They're fairly uniform in type, but, their colors are just all over the place. So they were pretty neat. And the take-home message with that is that, their situation is not much different from here in the U.S. in that, they're still coming across these populations of animals that, thankfully you're able to get to before they're all gone. But one of the things we do here at ALBC and encourage our members is, you guys are our eyes and ears out there, and if you see a population of animals that you think could be important, we always encourage you to give us a holler, especially with the poultry. The poultry breeds are disappearing left and right, and especially the old lines. We're really interested in lines of birds that have been with a family for generations or for many years, because genetically they'd be quite important to the overall breed conservation.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, and that whole process of discovery. I mean, you talked to us about that earlier, of
yeah.
how to find out if it really is an older population and to bring it forth.
Yeah. And The next species we had seen were pigs, and Fred, my husband, was unpleasantly surprised to turn a corner and come face to face with the pig of his childhood in the bane of his existence when he was a kid. And it's a pig called the Blanc de l'Ouest, or White of the West. And these are the pigs his grandmother had. And Fred, when he was a kid, he had a choice. He had to work on the farm, and he had two choices. He could either cook for and feed the pigs, or he could go out in the field and harvest potatoes. So he chose to stick around the kitchen and cook for the pigs and listen to all the gossip with the old ladies and then go feed them after. But these pigs are fairly large, and, you know, when he'd go to feed them, being a young boy and having a large pig charging you for its chow was pretty daunting. And to this day, he doesn't eat pork. He's like, I hate pigs.
I hate pigs.
And we saw these, and he's like, That's the one.
He was traumatized by his past. And this is, you said it's the pig, the White of the West? Is that what you called it?
Yeah, the Blanc, B-L-A-N-C, D-E,
de la,
L'Ouest, capital,
O-U-E-S-T.
L-apostrophe, O-U-E-S-T.
Okay.
And they're a pretty large white pig with very floppy ears. And they're a breed from Brittany, and they say they, you know, they have connections to the Celts that kept pigs. So they have some very old blood running through their veins. And the meals that Fred was made to cook the pigs really consisted mostly of potatoes, because you're in the land of potatoes there. But you also had other vegetables and food items that weren't fit for the family anymore. And so what they would do is throw everything into a big cauldron over the fire and stew this stuff for hours and make this big gruel. And you throw in veggies, you put in bread, and then after, you know, the potatoes are all mushy, and they could cool it off and then feed it to the pigs. And this breed is suited very well for the outdoors, and it was developed specifically for the production of cured meats and charcuterie. This isn't a pig that would be best for, like, fresh pork. The properties of the meat are such that it lent itself better for cured meats. And that makes sense because, you know, back in the day they didn't have refrigeration, and so in order to have meat around, you had to cure it in order to keep it. And so,
isn't that interesting? It's amazing how many flavors then we've kind of lost through some of these modern food techniques, isn't it? I mean,
to have
a pig that's specifically for smoked and cured meats.
Yeah,
wow. How was the meat different that made it more amicable to being smoked or cured?
It's probably the nature of the fat. They say their fat is highly flavorful. And what's interesting is I found comments about their flesh being a little more lightly colored than other pig breeds, but that probably has something to do with them having a largely, you know, potato-based diet as opposed to grass. Although they'll certainly, you know, eat some grass, but traditionally they weren't kept on grass. They were kept in small pens. I visited a farm of a friend of ours who still had the old pig barn from the turn of the last century, and they had this barn with a number of doors and stalls, and the pigs, you know, would go into their individual stalls at night, and during the day they would be allowed to come out into their pig pen and range around. But they didn't really wander far from the barn. You know, they stayed around there.
Mm-hmm.
And they had another breed over there, which was called the Bayou, or Bayou. And it's the B-A-Y-E-U-X breed. And they're from Normandy. And they're an old Norman breed. And Normandy's just adjacent to Brittany, very similar climate. And this breed was also suited for outdoor production, but they were adapted to have a large proportion of its diet consisting of milk byproducts mixed with cereal. You were in cow country up there, and so you had a lot of milk byproducts around. And this breed was known for the high quality and subtle taste of its meat, and it was made famous with a product that they called the Normand wood-smoked ham.
Mm.
And they're a spotted breed. They're real pretty, and they've got the floppy ears, too.
Right. And I'm sorry, what was the name of that breed, again, Jeanette?
The Bayeux. I'm trying to pronounce
Bayeux?
It correctly. It's B-A-Y-E-U-X.
E-U-X,
Bayeux. Bayeux, okay. Something like that.
Now, do we have any of those over here? Or is they pretty much...
I don't believe we do. You know, they're fairly... I'd have to look into it. I haven't finished researching all these breeds yet, but from what I understand, they're not over here. Most of the French breeds are not. Like another one we saw over there at the musée was the Breton horse, and I don't think we have any here. And that was a draft breed developed in Brittany that... stems from horses that were ridden by the Celts, the early Celts, and there were several breeds that were created from those horses, and one of them was this, what they call the Trait de Breton, which is a draft-type horse, and real pretty. A lot of them were kind of like this liver chestnut with a flaxen mane and tail, and pretty
nice.
Neat-looking color, and they're they're not particularly large horses. I mean, they're drafts, so they're kind of big, but not very big. And my husband was telling me his grandfather had a pair, and they used to like to use this breed of horse because they were able to stay focused on the job at hand, and so using them in valuable crops like artichoke fields where, you know, it's a perennial crop, and if you mess a plant up, it's going to take you years to get back to where it was. And so these horses could walk a straight line and keep to it and focus. And people valued that. And also their smaller size, they were able to fit more rows within a small area because the horses were smaller, and so you didn't have to make the rows as wide. So again, you know, talking about the countryside and the needs of the people to create these breeds that fit that niche is quite remarkable.
Wow, that is amazing. And Jeanette, help me with the name of this horse again. I didn't quite get it down.
T-R-A-I-T, I think it's E, D-E, and Breton, B-R-E-T-O-N.
They sound like quite a nice breed. Kind of like the Marsh Tackies, you know, that can just specialize to get through places where they. Listen, Jeanette, it's time just to take a brief break to have our sponsors. And do you have more horse breeds when we come back?
I do. I have another interesting encounter with horses outside of the musée. I'd love to talk about.
Okay, and do they have an organization similar, I'm sure they do, to the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy there?
I don't think it's very organized. They're working on it, but there's no organization that's too similar, but they've got some very good conservation programs there through the government.
Excellent. Okay. Well, our special guest today is Jeanette Berenger. She's with the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy, and Jeanette is the Research and Technical Program Manager. And we're talking about rare breed conservation in France. We'll be right back.
If you're looking for a unique gift idea for that dog, cat, horse, or chicken lover, then look no further than HobbyHillFarm.com. They have a wide selection of gifts for both the home and farm. My favorite is the chicken noodle soup with noodles shaped like chickens. I'm sure you'll find everything you're looking for at HobbyHillFarm.com. That's HobbyHillFarm.com.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
ManaPro is committed to providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. No matter the animal, no matter the product, you can be certain that ManaPro cares as much about the well-being of your flock as you do. So try one of the many poultry products offered at a retailer near you. ManaPro, nurturing life. Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com, that's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Looking for an all-natural way to keep your flock healthy from intestinal parasites? Tired of wasting all those eggs due to a long withdrawal period? The answer is Vermex. With no artificial chemicals, Vermex has been a huge success for many species, offering a completely natural way to address intestinal hygiene control and improve general health. Check out the online store at www.vermexusa.com, V-E-R-M-X-USA.com, to see what products you need to keep your animals healthy. Vermex, natural control of intestinal parasites.
Looking for something? Find it online at Bidbird Auctions. Bidbird.com is an online auction service that caters specifically to the poultry, waterfowl, game bird, and pigeon hobbyists. With so many rare and exciting species listed daily and in a wide variety of categories, you'll want to visit often. Join hundreds of the nation's top breeders that have made Bidbird Auctions their new home. And get sold on Bidbird.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
Oh, yeah!
Alrighty, welcome back to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Our special guest today is Jeanette Barringer from the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy, and she is their research and technical program manager. And oh my goodness, Jeanette, you know so much about the breeds conservation. Jeanette, do you want to just tell us a little bit about the annual conference coming up in November?
Yeah, it's going to be in Wichita, Kansas, and we're going to be having a lot of poultry and pig stuff going on, as well as we're fortunate we're going to have one of the authors of the new Fleece and Fiber Source book that's going to be doing a workshop on fiber production and the marketing of rare breed fibers. And so we got a little bit of something for everyone there at the conference. And you know, it's going to be in November, and the dates are the 11th and 12th. And we've opened up the conference, so you can register now. And the hotel site is very nice, right by the airport. And a lot of the activities are going to be at the Wichita Zoo, which has the largest exhibit of rare breeds of any other zoo in the country. And they've got a fabulous rare breeds farm. And it's subdivided into three regions of the world, one being an American farm, another being an African farm, and the other one being an Asian farm. And so they've got some pretty cool stuff there. And it's going to be a fun conference, and I would advise people to sign up sooner than later because the workshops tend to fill up pretty quickly. But that's going to be, like I said, November 11th and 12th. And then next year we're going to be here in the Raleigh area. So
Right.
Yeah. And
I was just going to say, some of those workshops, Jeanette, it's like, gosh, I want to take them all. There's covering the breeding rare breed rabbits for productivity. That's tail to snout, what it takes to be successful with heritage hogs. Tradition and techniques, learning to cook with heritage breed meats. And that's our very own Steve Pope, the heritage chef.
And we have you speaking at our conference.
Yeah, I'm not a different workshop, but yes, how heritage chickens can help save the world.
I just love that. I'm going to be there for that talk.
Yeah. Oh, my. Well, it just keeps getting richer and richer. The more I talk to Frank Reese, the more I realize that heritage chickens really are our path to help partly save the world anyway.
Sure.
Yeah. So that's the American Livestock Breeds Annual Conference. It's November 11th to 12th in Wichita, Kansas. And just contact the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy if you'd like to sign up and join in. They're in Pittsboro, North Carolina. And what's your phone number down there, Jeanette? I believe it's
919-542-5704.
Yep, 919-542-5704, or visit their website. It's been posted in the chat room at www.albc-usa.org. Okay. Mm-hmm. Very good. I'm really looking forward to that so much.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
You wanted me to mention a little more horse-related stuff as we journey back to France, or do we have time?
Yeah, we've got just about 7 minutes to go on.
Well,
this,
I'd seen a bunch of other breeds at the Echo Musée, but I thought I'd mention we had the most interesting encounter. We were hiking in a megalithic stone alignment area. These are a lot like Stonehenge, you know, rock alignments that were put up by they think were the Druids. And so we're going through this park, which the alignments were accidentally discovered in the 70s. Remember I told you about how brush grows like crazy in Brittany? Well, the brush had gotten up so big that everybody had forgotten that these tombs and alignments were there. And a huge forest fire came through and burned all the brush and revealed all these magnificent alignments. And for brush control, there were some equines I had seen in the distance, and I came up on a graphic and looked at the breed of horse and was stunned that they were Moulassier horses. Now, Moulassiers are...
Spell that for us.
Moulassier, Moulassier.
Moulassier horses. Okay.
And they're interconnected with a breed that ALBC works with called the Poitou, the P-O-I-T-O-U, donkey. And the Moulassier horse was created to be crossed with Poitou donkeys to create what they call the Poitevin mule. And the Poitou donkey, its only purpose in life was to be crossed with Moulassier horses to create these mules. The mules were more valuable than the individual breeds and were considered the best draft animal in all of Europe. So they were highly sought after and very valuable up until about World War I, when, of course, the automobile came into popularity and all of a sudden, you know, the draft animals didn't really need to be around. And Moulassiers, there may be 400 in the world left. And of all places, we're hiking in the middle of nowhere, and here are two Moulassier mares, and they had a Poitevin mule with them that had to belong to one of them. But just gorgeous horses. You know, they're kind of sick-looking because they're drafty. But, you know, picture being in this ancient place with these stone alignments and, you know, the rolling hills and, you know, off in the distance of these beautiful horses, and then come up to them, and they're one of my favorite breeds of all time, and it was just a really nice surprise, and I spent a good half hour just shooting hundreds of photos of them and getting all excited. I'm still excited when I talk about it, and got a picture of one right in front of me on my desk, So, you know,
what makes these horses, what makes them so special to cross with the donkey to get the Pajot mule?
I think it's their body type. It's the, you know, the hardiness. They have enough refinement in them that they're not, you know, big and bulky and ugly looking. Like some draft breeds can look really, you know, thick with the Roman noses. And these horses had really nice, graceful heads and necks. And so, you know, it created a draft mule that was big and strong, but still looked graceful. And,
Okay.
You know, and you know, the French take a lot into consideration for aesthetics, I think. And
yes,
they
do.
You know, so I think it was a number of combination factors that created this mule that was so sought after. But that's the whole purpose of this breed. And that's why there's so few of them, is because that purpose was taken away. And both breeds were at the brink, and both are rebounding. The donkeys a little more so. And if you see a Poitou, they're just hilarious looking. They're shaggy as all get out and just the neatest things. And they're these massive donkeys with these Neanderthal-type heads. And they're really not good for much beyond breeding, you know. They don't like to work. But the Poitous, we got about 2,500 of those worldwide, and I'm proud to say we probably have about 150 of them. Closer to about 100 here in the U.S. And the U.S. conservation program for the breed was integral in the French becoming more successful, because it was here in the United States that artificial insemination was first successful with this breed. And as a result, the French program benefited tremendously when the Americans were asked to come over to France and teach them how to be successful with that. And so, you know, it was kind of exciting to be able to give back to France in that regard. And the primary person responsible for that is Debbie Hamilton up at the Hamilton Rare Breeds Foundation. And up there, she's probably got about 70 Poitous up there. And a fun place to go see if you can ever get up there. You know, you can imagine, you know, 70-plus giant donkeys braying all at the same time. It's just, thank goodness she's in a remote place, because I don't think many neighbors would put up with that.
And she won an award. She won a conservation award last year at the annual conference.
That was very, very emotional
when she got that award, yeah.
Yes, well, you know, her years of service to this breed that, you know, if you want a tough case to work with, the Poitou was it. And, you know, the other benefit the American breed, the American animals have on the French is that they're disease-free, whereas there's, I think it's the anaplasmosis, I believe, is the disease that's affecting a lot of equines in Europe, and the population here in the U.S. is free of that. And so,
that's
the
incredible.
The U.S. population is real important. So, that kind of rounds up my tour de France, so to speak.
Did you see any cattle? There was a question in the chat room about any cattle, and we've got about 1 minute.
Oh, okay. We did. We saw the Breton Pied Noir, which is a small dairy cow that is very similar to the Kerry cow that we work with and probably related to them. They're very, very tiny dairy cow, and they're famous for making salted butter. And we saw a dual-purpose cow called the Nantes. So Nantaise, And
okay. And then how do you spell the dairy cow breed that you just mentioned?
Oh, the Breton, B-R-E-T-O-N, and then P-P-I-E, and then De Noir, N-O-I-R-E. And they're...
Thank you.
Yeah, and then so we saw the Nantes, and a lot, you know, we were in cow country. A majority of the cattle we saw, you know, obviously weren't rare breeds, but they were mostly Charolais, which is considered the one of the top beef cattle for French people. And the dairy herds were predominantly Holstein, but you saw a lot of Normand cattle. And these are like brown and white spotted cows that have higher fat content, but they're more of a dual purpose. And a lot of farmers put them in with their Holstein herds to kind of boost the fat content of their milk. And,
wow, Jeanette, you are amazing. Unfortunately, we're out of time, but I'm so impressed and in awe of your knowledge of these minor breeds. So thank you so much for sharing your working vacation there in France.
Yeah, and I'll send you the link so you can see what these animals look like. And
love to.
Anyway, my pleasure as always to be on the show.
Oh, well, we always enjoy having you and always learn so much. I've got 4 pages here of notes. Our special guest today has been Jeanette Barringer. She's with the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy, and you can contact the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy at www.albc-usa.org. Jeanette, thank you again.
Thank you. Take care. Bye.
Okay. Well, Jesse, it is now time. We just barely have enough time to get this prize in, and we have a mystery prize from eggcartons.com, so, Jesse, do you have a trivia question ready?
I didn't know we were doing
trivia. I do if you don't.
Yes, please help us out here. I do not.
Okay, I do. So, for eggcartons.com, what number do we want to have? You choose a number if I have the question.
That I can do. Let's go to number 4, running out of time, so...
Thank you. Okay, the question is, why is the Poitou, P-O-I-T-O-U, donkey, so special? Why? And we just talked about that Jeanette just told us why they have this special breed of donkey, the Poitou donkey. Why is it so special? Call in if you know the answer, 347-637-3237.
347-637-3237.
Hmm?
So why is the, I guess try to say this, why is the Poitou? Poitou donkey, so special.
So special, yeah. Why is it so special? And it's,
okay.
And she just talked about that. And because you have to, it's one of two components to get a very special mule, just to give you a hint for those. Caller number 4, why is the Poitou donkey so special? And it's, I'll give a hint since that's probably a little, we don't have much time. It's a breeding program. So, call in if you know the answer, 347-637-3237. It's a surprise prize from eggcartons.com. Oh, Jesse, we've got an amazing week coming up. Now, tomorrow we'll be talking with Katie Letcher-Lyle, and she's going to be talking about friends in high places, and it's her experience and with conversations with the dead and with the other side, so friends in high places. On Thursday, we have Back Home Magazine, Richard Frudenberger. We'll be talking about how to put fish up. And, of course, then we get to Fun, Freaky, Frivolous, Frolicking, Fractured, Rated R for Rooster Friday. So that takes us to the end of the week. How do you think about that? Yeah. Okay,
well,
we've got 2 minutes, and we've got a caller in. Let me see who this is. Area code 336. You're live on the air at the Chicken Whisperer Talk Show. Please give us your name and where you're calling from.
This is Jessie from Roxborough, North Carolina.
I'm sorry, what was your name again?
It's Jessie.
Jessie
from Colorado?
No, Roxborough, North Carolina.
North Carolina. Okay, just real quickly, Jessie, do you know why the Poitou donkey is so special? What's it used for?
I thought I knew, but now I'm not quite sure. They were supposed to have been bred for the superior working mules.
Exactly, you got it. They're bred specifically to cross with the Nalasir horses to create a special mule that is just really valuable and steady. Okay, do you know the routine? Just email
yes.
chickenwhisperer.net. Okay, put the name surprise prize from maycartons.com and include your name, address, and shipping label. Okay, Jesse, we are out of time. We've got 25 seconds. Thank you so much for coming in and joining us as our special co-host. You've been absolutely fabulous as usual. Okay. And Andy Schneider, the Chicken Whisperer, is the creator and driving force of the show, back with us on Monday. Thanks to the chat room Chickeneers and all our listeners for clucking along. And, of course, where would we be without blogtalkradio.com for providing the radio, chat, and the video services. Blessings to all, and may the flock be with you evermore.
When you find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking, there is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Ha ha ha!